Can the Bengals ride the momentum they got from their first win of the season against the LA Rams on Monday Night Football? We'll see as the team gets ready to head to Nashville to face the Tennessee Titans. What's up, everyone? Welcome into the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm your host, Kelsey Conway, here at the Enquirer Studios. It's a rainy day in Cincinnati, but we are going to bring you the latest. I'm here with podcast producers and staff photographers, Sam Green and Phil Didion, and we are working on a short week here from that Monday Night Football game, but that does not stop us from being able to bring you guys the latest on what you need to know about your Cincinnati Bengals. And let's start with Monday Night recap before we focus on the Tennessee Titans. It's, as I mentioned, a quick turnaround for Zach Taylor and his team as they get ready for a road matchup. But I think that the Bengals, listen, Joe Burrow said after the game, a big reason why he wanted to play was that he wanted to avoid an 0-3 start. They were able to get that win. But did you leave that win with questions about what are realistic expectations for this Bengals offense with an injured Joe Burrow? That's how I left the game. And, you know, it's been interesting to hear from Zach Taylor, Joe Burrow, and now offensive coordinator Brian Callahan, in that no one is particularly pleased with the offensive production. The first half of the game against the Rams, the Bengals offense looked lost. They looked completely out of sync, and that's not what you want to see in week three. You understood week one, that being Burrow's first game back after missing all training camp, the rain. Then week two, you started to see the Bengals offense come to life, specifically in the second half. And then Burrow reaggravates his calf. And now what is the expectation of the Bengals offense? They were going to be limited, but when he made a decision to play, they knew they were going to have to try and do a lot of different things to keep him comfortable. And you knew there might be a little bit of a drop off, but the drop off that happened in the first half wasn't acceptable to anyone in the Bengals locker room and the coaching staff. And a lot of it had to do with pre-snap penalties. Zach Taylor saying today, those absolutely killed us and we've got to take care of it. It's something that the Bengals pride themselves on, and it's being a team that doesn't make those type of mistakes. And they made a lot of them against the Rams. And with an injured quarterback, they cannot put themselves in situations that make things harder. It's already going to be hard enough this season, realistically. They can't do things that make it harder. And they did that on Monday night. And they were able to squeak away with a win, but against other teams, you can't put yourself in a hole like that where you're making Burrow start with first and 15 or, you know, a second and 18 because you have, you know, penalties. And that's not something that they can do. Also, it was good to see that Jamar Chase was able to get involved after saying, you know, he wanted the ball more. You know, I'll have a story coming on Cincinnati.com. I had a chance to talk to Brian Callahan one-on-one today, specifically about that meeting that he and Jamar Chase had. And you know, Brian Callahan said it wasn't like he came into my office and he sat down across from me and it was like a stern meeting. He was like, it was on the practice field and I just asked him for his input. And he was like, I do that all the time with those players. But it clearly was evident that they were going to try and get Jamar Chase more involved. And I think you're going to see more of that with Burrow really struggling in some facets of his game because of this calf injury. It's going to be on the Bengals wide receivers to step up and make even more plays. And they all have said that they're willing to do it. They know that there's going to be more responsibility on them. And that's what they're here to do, is to carry this offense. And there's going to be more of that coming their way. So some positives. And I think the offensive line has been really good for the Bengals the last couple of games, specifically against the Ravens and the Rams. Of course, they haven't played the type of edge rushers that you saw in week one in Cleveland. But I think the amount that has been talked about the offensive line over the last 2 years, I want to take the chance to give them some credit here because I thought they played really well against the Rams and specifically against Aaron Donald. Yeah, of course, he was going to get his sack. Probably could have been two, but it was called back. But I thought overall they played really well. So some bright spots there. But I think the Bengals are really going to have to get creative in the run game. And I had a chance to talk to, as I do weekly, the Messenger's Mike Renner, a former PFF draft analyst. He's one of the best football analysts, in my opinion, in the game. And we just actually talked about how the Bengals are going to have to get creative with their run game because of Burrow's limitations. Right now, the Bengals rank number 29 in rushing offense with only 208 total yards, with only 69.3 average per game. That's going to have to be a little bit more productive, specifically on first downs. So we'll see what the Bengals are able to do from a schematic standpoint to be able to dial up the run game a little bit more and get a little bit more production out of that. I think right now you're not going to see the, you know, 30 plus point games from the Bengals offense until that calf starts to heal for Burrow a little bit more. They're going to have to get creative and find different ways to win. And this team has shown in the past that they can. And so they'll have to rely on the run game, have to rely on their receivers to make plays with the ball in space, as you saw with Jamar Chase. I totally expect T. Higgins to have a bounce back game. Those drops were very uncharacteristic of him, so I expect him to play a lot better. And we'll see what they do from a tight end standpoint. Irv Smith is going to be day-to-day this week, Zach Taylor saying, so it might still be the Drew Sample, Mitchell Wilcox, Tanner Hudson show for a little bit, but it's going to be all hands on deck for the Bengals for the next foreseeable future. You don't know when Burrow's going to start feeling better, but right now, for them to keep stacking wins and continue to put themselves in a position to be in the mix as the season goes on for the postseason, it's going to be all hands on deck on offense. On the defensive side of the ball, that was probably my biggest takeaway from the game, was that finally the Bengals defense is back and showed you what you expected them to be this season. They returned a lot of their starters from last year. They all have familiarity besides Nick Scott in Lou Anarumo's scheme, and just the performance over the first 2 weeks, specifically in the run game, isn't what you're accustomed to seeing from Anarumo's group. And I thought the Bengals defense really took the first 2 weeks to heart and really showed what this group is going to be this season. They're going to be more of what you saw against the Rams than you saw against the Browns and the Ravens. They were terrific in the red zone when it mattered most. They really bowed up, and it was really, really nice to see the pass rush get going, because for them to have not really affected Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson was a little bit of a disappointment, in my opinion, because of how talented that group is. They've paid Trey Hendrickson a lot of money, Sam Hubbard a lot of money, DJ Reader a lot of money, and BJ Hill a lot of money to get after the quarterback and affect him. And they didn't do it in the first 2 weeks. And then they came out firing on all cylinders in pivotal moments when you really needed to get off the field and give your offense another chance after kind of sputtering in the first half. So 6-sack performance for that Bengals defensive line. And you got to assume that that was kind of their warm-up game, and you'll see more of that coming from there. Because as I wrote in my post-game analysis, it's going to be on the Bengals defense more than ever. Last year, they were able to really show up for the Bengals offense, but for so long, it's just been Joe Burrow's show and everyone else kind of just doing their job. But I think Logan Wilson's two interceptions and the pass rush making impact like they did, I think those are things you're going to have to see on a weekly basis from this team. The more turnovers they can get, keep points off the board, as I mentioned, it's going to be an all hands on deck thing. And the good thing is Zach Taylor said this is the deepest roster he's ever had. So this team is built to be able to overcome adversity like they have right now, with their star player continuing to nurse his calf injury. We'll get a chance to talk to Joe Burrow later today. It's a little bit of a different schedule on Wednesday. Zach Taylor gives the guys the morning on a Wednesday to continue to get themselves back ready to go for the game. With that late night on Monday night, it gives the coaches also more time to game plan. So we'll talk to Burrow later today, but let's talk a little bit about the upcoming matchup with the Tennessee Titans, a team that Zach Taylor said it feels like they're playing an AFC North team when they play the Titans, because of the way the Titans are built. They like to run the ball, and they have a stout defensive line, and it's a team that the Bengals are very familiar with. For the last 2 years, they've faced off against the Titans, all of them in Nashville. But Tennessee's roster for the most part is still kept intact, and it's all centered around Derrick Henry on offense. Ryan Tannehill is continuing to play at a high level. The offense as a whole hasn't been that productive. They've struggled to really get going on offense, but like I said, they return a lot of the same players and familiarity in their offense, and anytime Derrick Henry lines up against you, you've got to be able to tackle him really well, or he can wreck the game, as you've seen a number of times. So I think if the Bengals defense is really able to shore up their run defense and really make the Titans one-dimensional, I think things will go well for Cincinnati's defense. On the other side of the ball, it's all going to come down to Burrow's protection. And I think Tennessee's defensive line is definitely better than the Rams and better than the Ravens. And I think that the way the interior Bengals offensive line protects against Jeffrey Simmons is going to be massive. So if they can continue to keep Burrow clean like they have the last 2 weeks, I think they found some rhythm in what they can do with Chase, Higgins, and Boyd to be able to get them the ball out of Burrow's hands quick and the ball in space. So it's going to be a line of scrimmage day on both sides of the ball. And that's how I think if the Bengals can win that, which they have in the last few times they've played against the Titans, things will go well. And they know how to beat the Titans. They know exactly what type of game it's going to be. And I think heading into a game where you know exactly what you're going to get is better than having to match up against a team you're not that familiar with and the whole surprise element. I think the Bengals can go into Nashville, win this game. I think it's an important game for the Bengals to win because on paper, they're better than the Titans. And with Burrow's status, you know, going to be, we don't know what percent his calf is with him just kind of riding this wave right now. I think you can, as many wins as you can get against teams you're supposed to beat, it's really important because when you do face those tougher opponents later on in the season, you're going to want to have some of these wins in your back pocket. So that's just some quick thoughts on the upcoming matchup against the Titans. And for more on what happened against the Rams, what you should be excited about, what you should maybe be worried about, here is my conversation with the Messenger's Mike Renner. I hope you guys enjoy Mike's analysis as much as I do.
So finally a primetime game that you were able to watch the Bengals in real time. And I know that you said that you like to go back and watch the All 22 when you're actually breaking games down. But when you were watching it live, we were texting, and I guess we'll start with our conversation today with just your general thoughts on the Bengals-Rams game. And then we'll get into the offense and defense as our conversation moves along.
Yeah, I think there were signs of encouragement on both sides of the ball. I think defensively, like, they won this game, right? I think that's where they won it. Multiple picks on that side, multiple big plays. The pass rush came to play. Like, that was, you know, kind of a complete all-around performance, all three levels of the defense. And that's what you can hang your hat on while Joe Burrow's hurt, right? Like, that's why this makes this one of the best teams in the NFL, is you can play, you don't have to play a perfect game all around for this team to, you know, handle what could be a playoff team in the LA Rams. So that was very encouraging. Offensively, I thought they wanted to, you know, we talked on the same show last week about explosive plays, like not being able to attack down the football field, not having those. And I think they wanted to, you know, very first play of the game, they came out, draw up a little play action. It was three goes was the concept. And just the Rams all night were saying to the Cincinnati Bengals, we're not going to let you beat us deep. They sat in the softest of zone coverages that I saw, you know, anyone play against the Bengals this season. And we're just saying, we're not going to let you go one-on-one with the corners on the outside. That's just not going to happen. So if you want these explosive plays, it's going to happen with run after the catch. It's going to have to happen in the run game, something else, because we're not going to put a cap on your offense. So, like, if you were expecting, it just wasn't going to be there no matter if Joe Burrow was healthy. You weren't going to be finding anything down the football field. But I think the biggest thing was you're probably going to see more teams kind of replicate that model if Joe Burrow can't extend plays. And because, you know, when he was mobile, and when, you know, maybe you play that coverage and then Joe Burrow can escape the pocket, that gives him 10, 15 yards to run. Those are like easy first downs for him to pick up otherwise that he's just completely not doing right now. And you saw they didn't run any snaps under center outside of, you know, I think a spike in the kneel downs. The rest was all shotgun. And it was kind of like they moved the pocket once in the passing game. They had one rollout the entire game. So it was like stationary drop back passing and knowing that Burrow wasn't going to be able to hold on when pressure came. So I think you're going to see that until he can move again. I think you're going to see that game plan replicated to where it's just going to be teams saying complete, you know, every single pass all the way down the football field, put together this perfect 12, 15 play drive to beat us. Betting that Joe Burrow can't right now, or the offensive line can't protect for that many plays down the football field.
So since we're talking about Joe Burrow, of course, let's talk about the offense. And I actually just had a chance to, I just came over from the Bengals facility and we just chatted with offensive coordinator Brian Callahan. And I asked him, with Burrow's calf being what it is, and the fact that calf strains realistically don't heal until you can get multiple weeks of rest and not do anything. Well, that doesn't seem like there's any time coming for Burrow to just be off of his leg for a couple of weeks. I mean, even the Bengals bye week isn't until almost a month. And even that's just a week. Maybe you can get him to 10 days of rest. So it seems like this is kind of going to be a thing. And it might be worse some weeks and it might be better some weeks, but it's going to be a thing all season long, basically. And so I asked Brian, what's the realistic expectation of this offense? And I thought his quote was really interesting, and I want to read it to you because I think so many people, of course, Joe Burrow's limitations were on full display. But I think that the assumption around the coaching staff and the players is that it's a little bit too much of a scapegoat right now for what's going on with the Bengals offense. And he said that our expectation is to be a really good offense. To put blame on Joe not being fully healthy is a cop-out when asked about what's going on with their production over the last 3 weeks. With what you know about quarterbacks and what he's dealing with, do you think the Bengals have a realistic chance to be the explosive unit they've been for the last 2 years, this year?
I think they can do more to work around his limitations right now than they have done. And I think honestly, their biggest play was my favorite play call the entire day, which was, they motioned to pistol. Yeah. They did a fake pitch to the left and then brought Ja'Marr Chase over to the right because no one thought, you know, that they even had the capability of rolling Joe Burrow out the pocket. I think it was the only time all game they did roll him out the pocket. And so the defensive end crashes and he's out the back door. Like, doing more of that, and I think getting into more of the pistol formations to try to replicate the under center stuff that they obviously don't want to do because they don't want to move him around as much. So they just go, you know, going completely shotgun. You have to kind of get that play action running game back into the offense that just doesn't exist when you're just doing that shotgun handoff right in front of you. It doesn't have the same level of fake. It doesn't affect defenses as much. And so it's something that, as a Packers fan, the Packers did 2014 playoffs. They went to purely pistol when Aaron Rodgers had the calf injury and really didn't miss a beat offensively. So I think taking a page out of something like that, and obviously got to the NFC Championship game that year and lost to the Seahawks in a terrible fashion that I still hate, but obviously. But that, I just think more of that and less static looks, right? I think kind of what we talked about last week about you have to be to get those, you know, to be, you know, the offense they've been in the past with what it looks like now, they have to almost be perfect everywhere. And so when you get a drop, when you get your, you know, an offensive tackle getting beat, guard getting beat super quickly, you know, like Aaron Donald was doing a few times in that game, it just really sets back drives and you don't have the Joe Burrow that can save you out of a 3rd and 12, 3rd and 15, like you did in years past, right? That's the problem with where that calf is at, is there's no ability to convert those. So you really have to almost, it kind of adjusts from the top down your play calling to try to avoid those 3rd and 12s, 3rd and 15s, 3rd longs. And then you're really putting yourself in this position where it's just all dink and dunk down the football field. So any way you can get back that play action shot passing game that really has not been, basically been non-existent the first 3 weeks of the season, I think they have to explore it and have to almost, you know, go back to the drawing board of how they're even going to approach scheming up this offense instead of just saying, hey, we're only going to pick the plays that Joe Burrow can run. It's almost like, no, we have to dream up some new plays or dream up some new stuff that Joe Burrow can now run in his current form.
Well, since you referenced that play, that was your favorite play. Brian Callahan was talking about that specific play, and he said that they had to ask Burrow at halftime, can you run this play? Like, are you feeling good enough to run the play? And he was careful in saying, that's not what we're doing every time. We're not asking him, can he do it? Like, he was like, once the ball kicks off, you're assuming he can do it. But because of that specific play and what had happened in the first half, they wanted to check in and say, if we call this, can you execute it? And he was like, yeah, I'm good. So I think there's going to be a lot of that. But specific to what you were talking about with that season with Aaron Rodgers, he actually was on Pat McAfee yesterday, and I wrote a story on Cincinnati.com about it. He said he like totally tipped his cap to Joe Burrow and was like, I texted him earlier in the week. And then after the game, I texted him and was like, that's what good competitors do. They show up and they play through pain and they don't make a big deal out of it. Where do you feel like you saw that calf injury impact Joe Burrow specifically, whether it be mobility or him being able to push and plant in the way he is able to get through his throwing motions? Where did you see it most affect Joe Burrow?
So now it probably does like affect him in his throwing motion. Like you're just not going to be as down to down consistent as he wasn't like fully healthy, right? You're just not going to be. But I think where you just see it the most is just the complete inability to take any chances, like movement skills. Like he's just really not, pressure comes, it's not, let's back up, create more space. It's let's get rid of the ball. And that's just something that, you know, because again, the competitor comes out when you do get in that mold where it's like, let's create more space. And then you start to scramble and then you go to the next, you know, then it goes, it kind of snowballs and you're sprinting up the sideline and you know, tear your calf all the way or something bad happens. So that's kind of what's in the back of his mind right now. It's not that necessarily he can't move that little bit. It's just that once you start moving that little bit, that moves, you know, it's almost the, like I said, the snowball effect of that becomes moving a lot and then going out into a full sprint and then re-risking injury. So sort of stylistically, he's just really protecting himself right now, as opposed to the guy who really, you know, would lay his body on the line every single week, you know, otherwise. Like, he is a competitor. That's just how he's wired. And taking that little bit out of him really kind of changes how, just how this Bengals offense is going to be run.
So the last point I want to make about Burrow is that it's sore, really sore, apparently, after playing Monday. It's a short week for the Bengals, but it's not, you'd think it's not going to be this bad a month from now. And it's, I don't think there was a lot of conversation of should the Bengals just not have him play. I don't think it's as easy as that, because as you said, after the game, you fall to 0-3. The morale in the locker room is really different. And that's why he really just like pushed through. But as long as he and Zach Taylor and Brian Callahan think that they can be good enough to win games with him, because no offense to Jake Browning. Jake Browning has never played in the NFL in a regular season game. And I'll take Burrow at 70% over Jake Browning. So I don't think 100%. It's that. Yep. That easy. But because of that, I want to ask you specifically, what should Bengals fans listening to this podcast, what should their expectation of Joe Mixon and the Bengals run game, what do you think it should be?
That's where, you know, if there's, it shouldn't be affected by how defenses have been playing Joe Burrow, right? Like that aspect of their offense has fallen flat. And again, like, you're not doing the same under center rushing game you were in, you know, years past. And there's maybe some of that, but you still should be more effective than they have been. Just complete non-factor, basically, in every single game. And again, some of that comes with just getting a little more creative, doing just a little more in to try to get space in that regard. And then some of that also just comes from, they're getting their butts kicked up front far too often. And the problem is, it's not getting any easier. You're finding the best run defense in the NFL over the past year and a half now in Tennessee this weekend. They have the best interior defensive line in the NFL. They're going to handle that matchup wholly. So like, to get anything to basically avoid the fact that your interior is getting your butts kicked right now and just try to put them in a more favorable situation, try to get them maybe out in space after the edge, something other than pounding into a brick wall. Because right now the running game is, you know, it's a waste of down, truthfully, on most plays.
Well, I mean, we could spend a whole podcast diagnosing what exactly is wrong with the Bengals' run game, but I'm a little surprised in that all offseason, the Bengals said we need to be better in the run game. And what's important to note is the Bengals are never going to be, as long as Joe Burrow is here, a run-first team. They are very adamant in being a drop-back offense with Burrow. And that always is where I'm a little confused as to what is the expectation for the run game, because they're never going to be, you know, in my opinion, a top 10 run team. But they do need to be more effective in the run game, specifically when they're given the ball to Joe Mixon on first down and, you know, constantly putting themselves in third and eights because they're, you know, not getting enough on first and second down when they try and run the ball. So I guess where I'm confused is that Brian Callahan at the combine said we need to be a better running team, and his dad is the best, arguably the best offensive line coach in the NFL up in Cleveland. And who's a better running team when Nick Chubb is healthy than the Browns? There's very few. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's a scheme related issue, or do you think it's a personnel related issue? And if it is a personnel, does more of the responsibility fall on the Bengals offensive line or Joe Mixon? It's a loaded question. I just hit you with
that. Honestly, I think, not going to be like the answer probably they don't say it's one here, but I think it's personnel, truthfully. Like, they do not have people movers up front. And you're going to say, oh, Orlando Brown's huge. But like, he's really high cut for an offensive tackle. He's never been the move the line of scrimmage type. You can't go through him, but he's also doesn't play low enough to really be this like butt kicker in the running game. They just don't have that up front. You know, they don't have like the only guy like that on the roster really that like fits that mold is Jack Harmon, and he's obviously wildly inconsistent, but like this is just not the most physical offensive line. So you're never going to be like short yardage team. You're never going to be like a great, you know, impose your will sort of offensive line, unfortunately. So you gotta try. That's why I'm saying you gotta get a little more creative in the concepts you're running to try to avoid what is in most weeks probably going to be a mismatch for them.
What have you thought about, since we're talking about the offensive line, you can say it's okay that they don't have those people movers in the run game because they've been, in my opinion, they've been pretty good protection wise over the last, I mean, throw the first game out. And yeah. I know that Baltimore doesn't have those ridiculous edge rushers like they're going to face when they play Pittsburgh and Cleveland. But I think one of the bright spots over the last 2 weeks has been Burrow's been given some time to get through his reads back there. I think you can see the improvements through the first couple of weeks. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, this past week it was Aaron Donald or nothing really for the Rams. Okay. Like that, just thinking back to it and just what I watched, like if he wasn't knifing through the middle of that offensive line, I thought the rest held up really well. So I think the time's been afforded there. And that's why you paid Orlando Brown. That's why you built this offensive line as it is. It's like you're prioritizing pass protection first, knowing that's how you're going to win, you know, a North championship again, how you're going to win a Super Bowl. But hopefully like that continues as such. Yeah.
Well, we can get into it more in the offseason when it's like free agency and draft time. But do you think that when they're deciding how they're going to assemble their offensive line, whether it be in free agency in the draft, like it's very rare as an offensive lineman that you're really good at everything, right? I mean, sometimes offensive linemen are really good in run blocking, not as good in pass blocking. Do you feel like maybe they sacrifice a little bit when they're evaluating offensive linemen? Like it's maybe okay that he's not as good in the run game, but if he's really good in pass blocking, we prioritize that. Do you think that's how they evaluate things?
I think there's maybe a little more, maybe it's not as simplistic as that. They're probably still just trying to identify talent any way they can. But I think just from like the body types that they, especially like along this interior, they have not prioritized like larger 330 plus guards and centers. Like these are more svelte. And it's because, you know, they've wanted to do a lot of stretch zone in the past under Zach Taylor. Like that's been their bread and butter. You don't want 330 plus pounders running stretch zone more often than not. So I think that also plays a factor in it too, is that they're just prioritized more of that body type that fits that running game in the first place, which then also happens to be guys who can move and pass protect. So I think it's almost a twofold decision there by the front office.
Is when you did your draft evaluations, what do you think about Chase Brown? Is he someone that can help the Bengals, or you still think he's a little bit away from being able to help out here?
I would love him to see the field just in terms of his speed, right? He's a 4.4s guy. He was, you know, he can get out in the open field and really fly and just give them a little, you know, change pace back, like truly like give them more of a guy who can get to the edge and maybe create a big play in that regard. Because Nixon's not like slow by any means, but I think Brown just has a different level of juice. The only thing I worry about Brown and maybe why he doesn't see the field much is he had some bad fumbling issues last year. No clue. You know, obviously I have no behind the scenes info at practice and whatnot if that's been fixed, but especially with a rookie, you're going to be hard pressed if a guy's fumbling in practice to let him see the football field to even try to get those reps. So that could be playing a factor right now. Hopefully as the season wears on, we see more of him though, because again, they just need that little shot in the arm, I think, offensively.
On the defensive side of the ball, what did you feel like was the biggest adjustment Lou Anarumo made at halftime to change something? Because Stafford was shredding them a little bit early on, and not to take anything away from what the Bengals defense did, but I kind of felt like the Rams shot themselves in the foot a little bit in the second half.
Yeah, I honestly think now I think some of the plays were like fluky, not to like take anything away from Rams, but you know, the end around all the way down to the one, like they had some play action passes that hit that just like, I thought the Bengals played really well in a whole really solid game and put the clamps down when it mattered most. You know, that's a defense that's very tough to score on in the red zone because there's, again, no real weaknesses to attack. But I think what they did was they said, let's just play some man coverage against these guys. Like, let's go 1v1. Our guys are better than your guys. And when that was the case, it was. I think I don't have the exact stats in front of me because I don't work at PFF anymore. But like when I was watching them play man coverage, there was nothing there. I think a lot of the sacks in the second half came when the Bengals were in man coverage on the back end and basically just like Stafford had nowhere to go. And then Trey Hendrickson didn't need too much time on a lot of those sacks, but still like he had to hold that ball that extra tick. And then all of a sudden your pass rush is getting home. So I think that was a big adjustment. I don't even call it an adjustment, but like that was one of the things I saw where it's like they got the talent to match up. And obviously the Rams don't have great receiver talent with Cooper Kupp out, but they have the talent to match up with these guys. And a lot of teams, truthfully, 1v1 on the outside.
What's been your evaluation so far of the Bengals secondary? I mean, the sack by Dax Hill was, I thought, one of the best plays of the game. So what have you thought about how he and Nick Scott have played? And then on the outside, they're slowly bringing Cheeto along. And I mean, Lou Anarumo said like he's not getting a full game's worth of reps right now just because it hasn't even been a year since he's torn his ACL. So they're trying to be very strategic. Mm-hmm. So what have you thought about Cam Taylor, Britt, Dax, and Nick Scott, and then when Cheeto's in there? What have you thought about that group?
So Dax, you see the talent, man. I mean, he is a freak of nature athletically. The play he made in the backfield was just like, it's a one of one type of play that just like a lot of safeties don't make. But then also I think he's still, you know, as a deep safety, I think he's still not quite up to speed yet. And there's no like shame in that. He was a guy who played slot in college, and a lot of safeties around the NFL, like it takes years to have that vision of route concepts just because it's such a different thing that you can't really get nowhere else in the game of football is the NFL level route concepts coming at you and which ones to pick. And I think he was kind of, that last play to Puka Nacua up the sideline, I think that was him just peeking inside a little bit, backing into cover two, that he should have been over the top of that, never should have left that as open as it was. And those just little things that, you know, will come in time. So the guy's absurdly talented. I think Nick Scott's the one where it's like, I'm not sure you're ever going to get, you know, the high-end plays that Dax Hill has. I think you're just hoping for him to be solid as it stands right now. I don't know if he's played solidly for this Bengals defense. He's probably, if you're talking about anybody, you know, along the secondary back seven, I think he's probably been the weakest link so far, but I would far from call him like a liability. It's not like he's out there missing assignments left and right. It's just like a play or two here and there. Cam Taylor-Britt, though, he's been awesome. I mean, he's been their best corner so far. Really not a lot of negative things to say about him. Again, going back to those situations where they played man coverage, a lot of times Stafford's looking his way and saying, let me challenge the guy who's probably the most inexperienced corner here. And he wasn't giving an inch to those Rams wide receivers. So hats off to him. I think they got a darn good starting corner on the outside from what I've seen.
What about the last Rams touchdown play? Cam was in coverage there.
Oh, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. That one I can't recall.
Okay. We'll come back to it.
I can't recall this concept. Now I'm trying to think. No, I glazed over that one. That's on me. If it was bad by him. I can't remember it.
No, you're. Oh, what do you mean you can't remember every single Bengals play? No, I didn't mean to put you on the spot there. Let's talk about this weekend's game. The Titans are. You live in Nashville, and just looking at the numbers, and the crazy thing is the Bengals have played the Titans the last 2 years, so they're very familiar with what they're doing down in Tennessee. It doesn't seem like offensively they're a juggernaut that the Bengals defense is going to have to deal with. Looking at all the numbers, they got blown out by Cleveland last week. But as you mentioned, I would like to plug you here. I got a text from a coach of another NFL team, and they had played the Browns at so far this season, and they said that Cleveland's defense is the best in the NFL.
Yeah, that could be, truthfully.
The fact that Cleveland held Tennessee to 3 points. I mean, they also, you saw what they did against the Bengals. So clearly, Tennessee, it's more of a look at what they've done in the other games. They beat the Chargers, surprisingly, but then lost to the Saints. But if you don't tackle well against Derrick Henry, they can hang with everyone.
Yeah, they have one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL, this Tennessee team. And that's why they've looked so, and obviously you look so bad against the Browns when you have a bad offensive line, but why they've just been so inconsistent offensively is Tannehill doesn't have time when he drops back to pass, and Derrick Henry doesn't have holes. And so that's where, to me, the game starts and probably ends for the Bengals. It's just, can they make that such a dominant mismatch, your defensive line versus their offensive line, that Tennessee just can't move the ball? And I, from situations where that's been the case in the past with the Bengals, they tend to do well when they really have that O-line, D-line mismatch. Obviously, we just saw kind of on Monday night when they were throwing out a backup left tackle. Like they go four across in guys that if it's a mismatch, if you're going up against a replacement level guard, center, tackle, whatever it is, DJ Reader, Trey Hendrickson, BJ Hill, these guys can all eat. They can all win those one-on-ones. And that's why the Bengals are on defense. They just have all those guys at every single level. So I like that matchup for them. Problem is, I said at the beginning here, same matchup's going to be on the other side. You're going to have to scheme around the fact that this defensive line for the Tennessee Titans is going to kick your butt on the interior left and right. You're going to have to try to avoid it in the running game. You're going to have to try to scheme up something in pass protection to not get Joe Burrow just killed, because we saw it in the divisional rounds a couple years ago.
Nine sacks.
That's the same D line. It's honestly a lot of the same guys. They're just, some of them are even better now. So yeah. You're gonna have to work around that. But then you go to the outsides. Bengals have a lot more talent at wide receiver than the Tennessee Titans do. They have a lot more talent at corner than the Tennessee Titans do. They should be able to win those matchups on both sides of the ball. So that's where it's gonna come down to. But again, it's a road game. Joe Burrow unhealthy. This one, it's going to be tight, I think.
Yeah, the DeNico Autry guy, 3.5 sacks for Tennessee. Jeffrey Simmons, too. So, yeah, another good defensive line. Are you, with everything the Bengals got going on, who are you picking in this game?
This one's tough. I'm picking the under in this game is what I'm picking. I don't think there's going to be a lot of scoring, truthfully.
A slugfest.
I think the Bengals have some adjustments now that they know they can make. I think your offense, you're three games in of having to deal with this limitation. You kind of know what you can do now and how to better adapt. And I think you saw it in the second half. So this past week's game. So I think I like the Bengals again, but it might be like a 15-12 sort of, you know, it might be a real tight one. Not a fun one to watch, but I think I like the Bengals in this one.
Okay. Well, before I let you go, just you've been obviously watching a ton of college football. What's been interesting to you about the upcoming draft class, like through three, four weeks through the college football season? What's been interesting to you?
I think the most interesting thing to me is that this class is, this is going to be like an all-time class. To me, it reminds me a lot of 2021, which was obviously Jamar Chase draft, right? Where it was just like every guy that I'm looking at the top of this class, I'm like, wow, they are, yeah, that's a blue chip player. Like that's a guy who I don't think is going to be a bust at all in the NFL. Like there is just, it goes so deep with those guys. And then this quarterback class also has, you know, 10 guys that like seem like they're top three rounders. So this could be a really fun spring of evaluation. And like, you know, you're the Bengals here sitting probably hoping to be picking 32nd overall, but you know, realistically somewhere late 20s minimum, you could be getting a really nice player in this year's class as opposed to some last year's, because this one is truly, truly a deep and special year if they all declare that it is.
We'll have lots of time to talk about this, but I will say I couldn't help but watch on Monday night and wonder, what would the Bengals offense with a banged up Joe Burrow, how much could they benefit from a really solid tight end to throw the ball 5 yards over the middle and trust him to get you? And I know there was so much conversation. Are the Bengals going to take a tight end, Michael Mayer. You know, all those people before this last year. I know that they really liked Sam LaPorta and he went, you know, to Detroit. But you got to think, you look at the Chiefs, Travis Kelce with the Bills are, what the Bills are doing and what the Lions are doing and Vikings with TJ Hawkinson. Like, I think I'm very excited to get your tight end breakdown after the season, because I feel like that's coming, especially with probably the departures of Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins next year.
Yeah, I would love it. I mean, we'll see how the Bills offense fares this year and like how Dalton Kincaid's career goes. But like, I think there's a reason why the Chiefs are so hard to stop when they have that guy who has that connection with their quarterback over the middle of the field, who's just so reliable, because you can't stop it. And I don't know if you saw the clip this week of Kelce saying, you know, he ran the wrong route. He was supposed to run the corner. He goes to the middle and Pat Mahomes knew he was going to do it. Like when you have that guy that has that trust, and Joe Burrow, like, is the kind of quarterback who's, he do that stuff, you know, he'll do that stuff if he has that guy at the tight end position, that it's just so hard to stop because they make you wrong. They make you wrong post snap. That I think if you can find one of those dudes, now it's easier said than done to find that guy. But if you find one of those guys, who could take this offense to a level that's just like unstoppable.
Right. And also Mark Andrews, I forgot to mention him. Obviously the Bengals listeners know what he's capable of doing, but we'll have more time to debate that in the spring, but just wanted to pick your brain on, you know, some college football stuff. I'll be following along as always with your coverage. And if you want to read more of Mike's work, check it out on themessenger.com. He is doing a great job over there, so be sure to check out what he's doing. Mike, thanks so much. It was great talking to you today.
For sure, Kelce. Hopefully see you down in Nashville this weekend.
Definitely.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast. Be sure to keep it here next week and throughout the season. We'll have recap of the Titans game coming following the game. And then we will be here next Wednesday, of course, to get you set for the Bengals road trip to the Arizona Cardinals.